The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns Gear and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgearin.com/rain.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But here's the deal that I don't think a lot of people understand. Everyone, if you were like a cool Air Force in this world, you have a fighter. You have a fighter squadron. You have a fighter fleet. You go to air shows. It loops for music. People take pictures in front of it. Do you know how many countries in the world have bombers? Three.
I was just...
The U.S., China, and Russia. That's it. So when you look at NATO, there's no long-range strike. None of our allies have a long-range strike capability. It's us. That's it. So when you look at like 300 bombers, may sound like a lot, but when you look add it up from the coalition perspective, like, yep, we need 300 bombers. So.
Tower Demire Stitches, release to you, runway 4 left, wind 040 at 5, clear for takeoff.
Sea tide, Altera 0 eyes, we're clear for takeoff, clear for the airspace.
Fire projector, close me, I'm ready today. Hot, my bird ramp curveballs at 354.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. My guest today is Paco, who is the current winner for most appearances on the Afterburn Podcast. But Paco started off in the Marine Corps, became an F-15E Wizzo, weapons system officer, his weapons school graduate, has worked at the Pentagon. He has the Merge newsletter, which I have that link down below, which he also puts that out in a podcast form over on all the audio platforms as well as YouTube. If you want defense insights and what's going on in the world, you need the Merge newsletter. So click that link down below. Paco releases that on Sunday and then has his save round. So the things that didn't quite make it to the main newsletter pop out on Tuesday. But Paco has a lot of great info. And again, you can check out the Merge newsletter. So thanks to always my Patreon supporters for supporting the podcast. You guys make all this happen. Thanks to everyone who's left a comment, liked, reviewed, et cetera, over on the different platforms. If you're listening to this, please make sure you're following over on Spotify and Apple Podcast. You can actually click to follow the show and leave a rating or review if you're getting something out of this and enjoying it. But that being said, let's jump into the podcast with Paco.
Oh yeah, dude, totally. I was on this kick the two pods ago, and it was I told everyone it was me, Jake, and Tim. I was like, hey, as soon as we show up, I'm just gonna hit record. And then we'll come up with something that'll be the cold open. It'll be something out of this conversation, like the meeting before the meeting, you know. And it was hilarious, but it all fell apart because like Jake had like comms issues and fell off, and I didn't save the recording. I'm like, son of a...
it's always something.
We got talking about like a clown school, a circus school, and. They're like, what? And so at the end, he falls apart, and Tim's like, do we have to talk about the circus school again? I go, no, Tim, we're not going to talk about the circus school. I didn't leave that in there because I had no context, right? But then at the end of the interview, we're talking, and he's like, yeah, Jake's got to go. He's got to go to clown school. And it was like, it would have been like the perfect cold open, but I'd already deleted it. I'm like, oh, this is worthless.
it's too much. It's a bridge too far.
Bridge too far.
I'm trying to think.
Man, who did I? I've recorded a couple podcasts that pop up, but you do you do the meeting before the meeting, and in the meeting, like the guests pre-meeting, just like spilling the beans, like, oh, wait, you're gonna have to tell all the stories all over again. Like, stop talking. I should hit record, you know?
Like, shut up. I haven't pressed record yet.
I know we just met. This is gonna be sound really rude, but I need you to shut your mouth. Yeah. And then I'm gonna need you to tell me all this again, man. But dude, it's good to see you. It's been a while.
Yeah, dude, this is great. It feels great to be back. I'm one of your, I'm like on your three-peat now, I think, return guests. Well, if you don't include the bro chats, right? I think I've done, this is my third time on outside of that.
Yeah, I do think you have the gold medal for most returns to the Afterburn podcast.
Yeah.
So it's a worthless gold medal. So congratulations.
It's fool's gold. Fool's gold.
Yeah. What's been happening, man? See, obviously, you had already started the podcast since the last time we were together, because we did a joint Blue Angel Thunderbird podcast, which people heard that. I think was, I'll be honest, when you were pitching that idea, I was like, God, this is going to be such a pain coordinating with the Blue Angels and Thunderbirds. And it was kind of a pain, which you handled all the logistics. Those guys are super busy. But I was like, this is going to be a rah, 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 we're great podcast. And I think Astro just talking about where the Thunderbirds, you know, left the tracks, identifying that and having to get back on the tracks. So most people are just completely unaware that, all right, hey, there could be some real struggles in there. So that was the last time we were together, and I think that was a great podcast. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I still get feedback now. It's been, I was a big, before the season started, the show season. Now it's like wrapping up the show season, and I still get some feedback. I'm like, man, that thing, you know, I came for the, you know, for the air show, and I stayed for the leadership lesson.
Yeah.
A lot of good nuggets in that one.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised that it was not the, you know, rah, rah, rah. And as you said, too, it's like the Thunderbird One only does one interview a year. I was not aware of that. Maybe there's some exceptions, but I know we weren't the one. That was the exception, but
hey, we are the exception.
But hey, 1.1, we're there. You know, we can count it.
Yeah, that was, I really enjoyed that one. It was definitely worth the effort.
Yeah, man. Well, what else has been happening? So the Merge newsletter, Merge podcast. I mean,
well, this is weird. So yeah. I started a podcast and then you started a newsletter. I'm like, what's going on here, man? You're like, I'm encroaching on your turf and now you're encroaching on my turf.
Yeah. Hey, go sign up for my newsletter.
Yeah, I did. Well,
there you go. So that's the thing. Two different voices, two different opinions. Not even opinion, but you know, I was like, you know, need a newsletter. It's another form to reach people.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
some people like reading, some people like listening, some people like watching, you know, you just never know.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? It's, I was thinking of this for a while, because when I do my newsletter, it comes out on Sunday. And then I couldn't fit everything on the things I was doing on Sunday. And so I'm like, well, I'll just put the rest of it in Tuesday. Wait a couple days and give the rest of it. So that became the saved round. That's where it all came from. It's the stuff that was like left on the cutting room floor. And I was like, well, I still want to push this info out.
Yeah.
Well, then I was like, you know, someone was like, you know, you should just record a podcast of you every week, just reading the saved rounds.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, like, yeah, I guess I could do that. And then I just like completely fell off my radar. And then, you know, you have the lowdown. I was like, it's exactly what I should have been doing a year ago. So,
well, you still can do it. The problem is, as I'm curious to see how much time you spend doing it, because thing like is like there, this stuff, just you and I getting together like same time, lining our schedules, like scheduling this stuff is the bane of my existence. But even if it's just me solo, it's like, man, I got to find all this content, got to scrub it, go through, analyze it, write about it. And then, oh, by the way, I'm going to come sit down in front of a mic and record it, try not to sound too stupid, which is always a challenge. And then I got edit and splice it together. And then up. I mean, it's like nothing is just, it takes time.
It is way more work than people think. Right. And this is why I think like you go on YouTube and like the best YouTube videos, you know, 10 minutes max, it's like, all right, that's the sweet spot. Cause it's the amount of effort that goes into seeing those few minutes of production is like insane.
Well, I would like to be able to do the video version. I did the newsletter that fed the lowdown episode with, you know, hey, if there was a video that went along with it, I'd play it in like Riverside. This allows like a 90% solution to kind of do that, but you still got to go back and edit and piece it all together. It's like, yeah, I just I don't have the time to do this. And then also the motivation wanes.
Well, you're way further in the game than I am. I'm on like episode 20. You're on kind of episode 70 something right now, right?
Yeah, well, now I'm just like churning them out. I do have someone who helps me with editing these episodes. Again, it's probably like an 85% solution, but even still, it's like, I know you could automate this like with Zapier. Like you could just, all right, hey, we finished recording. I download this. This goes in the bucket and then just starts churning the stuff out. But one, I'm not smart enough to like figure out how to integrate all these things, but you still are going to spend an hour, hour and a half per episode, probably minimum, just putting it in all the places. And when I do, it's like minimum. You upload the audio version, the YouTube version, the descriptions are different in different spots. Like,
oh yeah. Like YouTube doesn't do like embedded hyperlinks in the comments,
yeah,
but it, but it does like HTML shorteners. Like who does that? Like all these, like we're nerding out over stuff that, you know, the people listening are like, I don't know what they're talking about. It's a lot of work. That's what you got to know. It's a lot of work. And the other thing, Rain, is that, you know, if you're going to do something, like don't suck at it, right? Like put some effort into it. So like I find myself in the, like, you know, the whole like cost benefit equation. I'm like, ah, this is a lot of work. I'm like, well, if I put less work in, like it'll just suck, or it'll suck more than it already sucks, right?
You just can't half-ass it. That's probably the mentality that then you just get worn out. But again, so if anything sucks in my production, which people can pick it apart, it's purely my fault and the lack of capability on my end, you know. So there we go.
Yeah, I haven't found anything that's like AI smart enough and integrated enough to like do a lot of the stuff. I found like, you know, 80% solutions, but I'm like, it's like I see the missing 20%, and I'm like, I'll do it myself until I find something better.
That is the thing. Everything is an 80% solution, which is usually like sometimes that's good enough just to get things out the gate and assess. But like when you put it out there and this is the final product, like it's just not going to work. So.
And you know what's crazy is that, you know, you have guys like that sit in your car in the parking lot and talk to themselves on a phone and have millions of followers on Instagram. And you know who you are.
Yeah.
Man.
I've watched, there's some like economic ninja, I think is the guy. I've seen him. He sits, he'll read off a cardboard box, like the back of a pizza box in his car, audio bumps, everything. It's just like hundreds of thousands of followers. I'm like, man, but he has good content. So there you go. The content is good.
Yeah.
You can have some quality for him. So,
well, I'm sorry, you're not going to have good content today. You're stuck with me.
Yeah, here we are. Hey, I mean, a lot's happened this week. If we're kind of talking like news wise, B-21 flew, T-7, I think, arrived at Edwards finally and flew at Edwards.
Yeah.
Air Force is talking about making the T-7 light attack. There's all sorts of things. So,
man,
it'd be so great just to.
All right, where do you want to start?
Like, I was like, here, Paco's download. I mean, B-21 would be a good one.
Okay.
Because I think the first bro chat we did was last year and the B-21 had just been unveiled, right? There was no Force.
It was December. It was like almost 12 months ago. It was unveiled and I can't believe it's been a year already. Holy crap.
Which is crazy to me. I don't know anything about the procurement process other than it usually takes forever, but you can probably talk in the weeds of like how long the B-21's been in the works and the fact that this thing's like flying a year later. Got a ways to go, I'm sure, but
yeah. So the B-21, crazy. Yeah, we talk about that. So the B-21 obviously just flew. Everyone's, you know, it's great that we got a new production aircraft, especially a bomber. We haven't had a new bomber in, you know, two generations now. Northrop won that contract in 2015. So if you do the math, that's what, 8 years. So that's pretty good, ish. I mean, for a bomber, I guess. I mean, it's not like a full size bomber. It's like a 3/4 scale bomber. It's like a miniature.
It's like a little mini. It's like a little B2.
Yeah.
There's one picture from that flight. I'll have to throw it up there. Like it's not a flattering picture of the B2, but it's like nose on, like looking up. You know, it's like it has like four chins. Like,
it does. It definitely has a couple chins. It looks like at certain angles. Yeah. Have you seen the angle? For those of you who are, you know, the B-21 versus the B-2. The B-21 is probably like 3/4 scale. It's got two engines versus four. You can see it's only got one main bomb bay instead of two. And then the real takeaway when they unveiled it, the first thing I noticed was the landing gear. You go, hey, those those wheels can't support that much weight. This thing's got to be a lot smaller than you think it is. And it is, right? And there's a picture from that first flight. So it's being chased by an F-16 from at Edwards. And there's a picture that has a really good frame, like a 3/4 angle looking up of the Viper close to the B-21. And you can just see like, oh, a Viper is not a very big aircraft. And that B-21 is not very much bigger than the Viper. So it's,
yeah,
it's not as big as I think a lot of people that think when they think of like a bomber, but it is the first new bomber we've had in a long time. America, right?
Yeah, there we go.
Freedom. Yeah. And it's one of the few programs that's actually somewhat on time and well, it's on budget only because of the way the contract's structured. So fun fact, you know, Northrop is actually losing money on that program right now. They're not making any money.
No, really? That's wow. I did mention in my newsletter last week about Boeing losing their minds over Air Force One. Like they're losing.
Oh, man. Boeing's burning like $1 million a day. Boeing Defense. That's how much money they lose. $1 million a day. And most of that's the Air Force One program, which is like the VC-25, the recap. So two aircraft, 747s. And in the save money, they're like, we're going to buy used 747s. So I think we're actually supposed to go to like a Russian airline. And so the two new Air Force Ones, ironically, are like former like Russian airliners that are being converted. Even that's over budget. Like it's not even a brand new airplane. So I don't know.
That's wild.
I don't know anything about that kind of stuff. Yeah, I was like, defense, you know, except that it's.
Yeah, obvious. I was like, I wonder like what is cost, what the overruns are.
I don't know. Yeah. Some of that's like fixed price contracts. That's what a lot of those charges are. So Boeing probably 7 years ago, something like that, to increase market share for like capture, they started bidding on fixed price contracts instead of cost plus. So cost plus, the government assumes all the risk for overages. And a fixed price, that's the price. And if you go over the price, like you have to eat the money. And so like the T-7, like they won a T-7 program. That's a fixed price. They're losing money on that right now. I think the Wedgetail is too, the VC-25. There's like four aircraft programs. They were all fixed price to like, you know, gain market share. And they are, but they're also losing money. So, yeah. I hear that the B-21, though, it'll eventually, probably in about 5 or 6 years, we'll actually start making some money. So, we'll see.
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, it's still, because it's 2027, is IOC, or when it's supposed to show up at?
Yeah, it's probably something like that. I'd put my money on 2028 if I was a betting man, but that's like, you know, IOC barely, you know, can do some things. It's in a squadron. Yeah. There's so many people trained, and when it like full operational stuff, probably not till like 2030, early 30s. Cause now you have LRSO, the new nuclear cruise missile. And I'm sure there's other things going in that aircraft, like weapons and things like that. But one of the cool things that most people don't realize, like it's being branded as a next generation bomber and a sixth generation aircraft, and in some ways it is, but the magic sauce of like how this program was able to stay relatively at cost and relatively on schedule is they just reuse stuff. Like a lot of the stuff out of the aircraft is like it just sourced out of the parts bins, you know, like we don't need a new cockpit, we can use these displays out of this other program, and we don't need this ejection seat, we can pull it out of this program. Same thing with like the engines, the landing gear, the radar. All the subsystems, like they're spending the money on basically the wrapper, you know, put all the stuff in the big wrapper on the platform. And, you know, that's kind of like what the F-117 program did. It was like one of the last aircraft programs that the U.S. had that was actually like on schedule, like to the day almost. It was like 6 years. And they used, you know, the story about this, they used the F-16 flight control computer. That was how they got it to fly. The brakes off of an F-15, the engines off of a Hornet, the HUD out of the Hornet, and then it uses C-130 ECS, the environmental control system, F-111 flight control actuators, and a B-52 INS. So they just threw this stuff together and it's like put it in something that has, you know, this outer mold line, and you know, good enough, right?
That's hey, it worked, right?
Yeah, and then you get into like, you know, F-35 or F-22. It's like every single thing is completely designed from scratch. Like, oh, do we really need these like, you know, consecutive miracles to make this thing happen? Like,
and then everything's proprietary, and then, you know.
Oh yeah, and that's one of the interesting things that you see now with the B-21. It'll be this the first aircraft that it was negotiated the data rights. So the Air Force is building a digital twin. The sustainment of an aircraft of the aircraft is actually being opened up for competition. And so one of the dirty secrets of the defense industry is that you don't make money selling the aircraft. You make the money on sustaining it. So like the F-35 program is a $400 billion program to buy the aircraft, but it's like $1.4 trillion on the back end to sustain it. And so they've locked down the IP and the sustainment contracts out to like 2070. So they own the supply chain. They own all the suppliers. Like they own everything. Like the Air Force is like, never again, never again.
Well, I didn't realize it until I was in the F-16 and then hearing, you know, if we wanted to change code in the software, I say we, not me, you know, someone smarter than me want to change code, right? It took forever to do it. But then the Guard, they could go right to Ogden and change it because of the way the contract was written. And then funny, on that same line, I heard the Ford CEO, he was talking about electric vehicles and some of the struggles they were having with it. So I think he said, you know, whatever a Mustang, whatever electric vehicle at Ford has 150 different pieces of operating system and software, all owned by the manufacturers of the different parts, like the seat adjuster. Bosch makes that, for instance.
Oh yeah, Bosch.
Whew. But if they want to change it, right, they got to go to Bosch to have that change to interface into their system. Versus like Tesla, from the ground up, they own all of it and can make the changes really quickly.
And yeah, the average like modern vehicle, if you bought a vehicle in the last 10 years, it has something like 20 to 30 different computer processors running and 100 million lines of code. And that's so integrating all of that, like plug and play, throw it away, like your ability to crack into that stuff. Yeah, a fun fact, since you're talking about Ford and vehicles, you ever have a Crackberry? Remember that?
What is it, like 20 years ago maybe?
Yeah. Do you know what that company pivoted into? Automotive software. That is their number one source of revenue. Yeah, they're huge in the automotive market. They do like integration for software for vehicles. Yeah.
Talk about a huge pivot. Cause like TomTom, kind of same deal. Like they made it into like, you know, actually selling their map software, right? Cause, you know, used to be like, oh, you had a TomTom to get around.
Yeah. But
everyone had a BlackBerry back in the day. And then just like overnight, probably around 2007, goodbye. So
yeah,
good on whoever saw that pivot, I guess.
Aligned with the rise of the iPhone, right? Like here's the iPhone, and then it's like, what do I want this keyboard for? Like, this thing's terrible.
But the Air Force held on to it for 10 years or so. Yeah. It's like, hey, you know what? Everyone can finally switch to an iPhone.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Better late than never, I guess. Yeah.
Lead the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, how do we go from B-21s to cars to Crackberries? I don't even know.
We cover a lot of ground. I'm so curious what all right, so B-21, talk like NGAD. One, why do we need a new bomber other than the fact that we haven't had a new bomber in almost three decades, right? Two and a half decades.
Yeah. All right. I'll talk about that first. Let's start with that. Then we'll just riff. All right. So right now the Air Force has 140 bombers, which sounds like a lot. You know, superpower coming through. But we have a lot of fighters, like 2000 something fighters, right? If you look at like fighter to bomber force ratio, it's like 1 to 10, 1 to 15, I think, 1 to 15 right now. If you go back and look at like global competition and the Cold War and all that, it's usually like half of that, like 1 to 7, 1 to 8, right? Like 1 to 15. So when you look at like bomber requirements, the Air Force is trying to grow the bomber force to about 175 bombers. That's 100 B-21s plus 75 or 76 B-52s with the J model, the upgraded engines and stuff. But there's a lot of studies that say we actually need like 300 bombers. And that sounds like a lot of bombers, right? But here's the deal that I don't think a lot of people understand. Everyone, if you were like a cool Air Force in this world, you have a fighter. You have a fighter squadron. You have a fighter fleet. You go to air shows. It loops for music. People take pictures in front of it. Do you know how many countries in the world have bombers? Three.
I was just...
The U.S., China, and Russia. That's it. So when you look at NATO, there's no long-range strike. Like, none of our allies have a long-range strike capability. It's us. That's it. So when you look at like 300 bombers, may sound like a lot, but when you look at it up from the coalition perspective, like, yep, we need 300 bombers. So That's really why we needed a bomber. There was a bomber program that failed in the early 2000s. That was going to be the B-3, the next gen bomber, what it was called. It failed, and the spinoff of that became LRS-B, which is where the B-21 came from. So that's why the that's why the when the program was invented, it had a fixed price because they wanted it, the other program was like out of control with technology ideas. It's like, well, if we just make it a fixed price, we'll constrain what's the art of the possible. And because we buy aircraft based on weight, there's a correlation between weight and cost. You kind of determine how big the aircraft's going to be by just, you know, how much the price is. So the price in contract is $550 million in 2010 dollars. With inflation, it's like $750 million a copy right now. So it's a cost plus to develop the technology, and then it's fixed price for them to produce it. So they had to actually build the airplane with a budget in mind to make any money. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, no, it really is. And honestly, I had not thought about it, but I was like, no one else has bombers. I've been, you know, Russia and China is like,
it is us. It's us. That's it. Like the UK had some bombers back in the 60s and 70s, and like the V-series bombers, they're all retired. France got close. They had like a supersized Mirage for a little bit, but it was like a fighter bomber. But that's it. We're it. Like, if we want to be, you know, partners and allies, we want to be the people that's going to bring something to the table. Like, we need a bomber force.
Yeah. Sidebar. Did you see, I think, the Russian bear, like, that packed it in into the Arctic? Or is it or up in the Siberia? Oh, man. All right. While you tell a story, I'm going to start Googling to see if I can find this thing, because these guys are landing. It's like whiteout conditions. They, I mean, hard landing. The thing snaps in half. Fireball careens down like the Siberian tundra here.
Were they doing like a ice field landing or a runway or
what? Yeah, ice or snow. Like, that's the only thing I can assume is obviously they operate in the Arctic all the time. And then, you know, if we look at maybe where potential threats might come from one day, like exercising up in there. I don't know.
Oh, the Arctic's crazy. I did a piece on that in the newsletter a month ago, and I was doing some research, and I was like, oh my God, like there's a lot of stuff going on up there. Turns out it's actually important. Yeah. You know, if the globe, you know, if the map was projected differently, we might have a different view of perspective of how important the Arctic is. Have you ever seen like a polar map of it, and you see Canada and Russia, and there's like this, like, you know, circle of water between the two of them, and there's like $2 trillion of like rare earth metal, you know, on the ocean floor. It's like the first people who can get there are gonna win, right?
Yeah, well, when you look at most maps, like, this is nothing to worry about, we're so far away, et cetera, et cetera. Let's see. All right,
unless you're like a flat earther, and then you just get to the end of the page and you're like, well, I guess we're safe, you know.
nothing to see or worry about here.
Nothing to see here.
All right.
Did you find it?
I want to bring up I did. Let me get my skills going here. It was not a bear. I do apologize. It's backfire. So let's see. I assume you can see that.
Yeah.
You can see it's a snowy night, that's for sure.
Oh yeah.
Some vegetation.
You flying that kind of viz in your day job?
You know, actually, this last week, very surprising going up to Anchorage, first snow of the year. It was quite, it looked like this. Couldn't see the runway, couldn't see anything.
Look, there's rain landing. Look.
Yeah. Welcome aboard.
Oh, my God. Oh, I did see that, actually. Yeah. Okay. Oh, man.
Yeah.
We should not be laughing at watching this.
We're not laughing. It was an opportune time with my landing. But, yeah, obviously those guys didn't make it. But, man, they hit hard.
Yeah. Man, the nose just snapped off.
Yeah, the visibility. And so, actually, to tie into this, right, was – so going up and landing, it was calling for light snow, maybe like a mile viz, I think is what the ATIS was calling initially. Go in there. Runway's a slightly downsloping runway. It had just been snowing for the last hour, so they hadn't plowed the runway. So it looked like that video. Like, everything was white. And then it appears to be heavy snow, moderate snow. So you get the visual effect of landing lights with all the snow zipping by you. It's occluded. It's, you know, worse than rain, so to speak. But I was like, you could see how your depth perception would get jacked up, or like potentially like where these guys packed it in like that. So yeah, not laughing at them. It's unfortunate. You hate to see anyone die, but it's like,
for those,
this is sporty business.
Yeah, for those who can't see it because you're listening to this, if you imagine like the craziest snow weather NFL football game and your people are trying to play football on that, you can't really see from because the TV cameras can't see. And it's so strong, they're like, you know, postpone the game. It's trying to land an aircraft in that. You can't even play a football game. You're going to land an aircraft. Yeah. Like, whoa. No thanks.
I don't know. It'd be tough to tell what the distance is there, but because you can kind of see like maybe a marker. I don't know. It's not good, Viz. And everything is white. Like everything is white in that image there. So not really.
Yeah, I mean, it's white out conditions. Like the sky is white. The ground's white. Yeah, everything's white.
Not where you want to be flying a plane. So, yeah. Digress there. So, yeah, that's what I was kind of pivoting there. It was like the, you know, who knows what they're doing. I mean, obviously the Russians have lots of land that's covered in snow and probably operate in it all the time. But I guess, I don't know where we went from. Yeah, we went from B-21.
Oh, bombers. And you said, hey, did you hear about the, we have NGAD to talk to if you want. We have CCAs. There's a whole bunch of 6th-gen stuff going on in the international. What do you want to do?
Before we do that. You're probably the one guy who might know the answer to this because my son actually asked me the other night, and it was like the numbering of our planes, right? When we go from a B-1, B-2 to B-21, we have an F-117. I think the F-16, F-15, F-18, those were all happening about the same time because there was a YF-17 in the mix, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got an F-35, we got an F-22. Do you have any idea of how we jump from number to number?
There is a process. There is an actual like Department of Defense instruction, and it has a process, and there's placeholders for different designations of aircraft. Now that said, there's also been weird things that make no sense. Like the B-21, like it should not have been the B-21. Like, no, like obviously if we're going to build only one, you know, bomber in the 21st century, like, let's call it the B-21, right? I don't know where they come up with that, right? But like the F-35 was the X-35, and it flew against like the X-32, if you remember that. But then what happened to the 33 and 34, right?
Yeah,
I mean it's there somewhere it's there as an X plane somewhere and in some science project somewhere. But yeah, some of them jump around, but they're not supposed to. There's like the 30 series. Well, I say that, but it's all jacked up, actually, depending on, and you can get into the, like, there's like two digits versus three digits, like your RQ-170 is like three digits long. So that means something in the designation hierarchy. And then you have like the F versus B versus Q. Yep. Like there's actual like a regulation for that. But then everyone just deviates from it anyways. So,
yeah, what I envision, there's probably like one government employee, he's probably a GS-14, and he owns the book sitting in the basement. And then I know it's probably a whole office, but I just envision it's just one guy named Steve who's working down there that's like, yep, here you go,
Steve the GS-15.
This is it. Okay, so all right, that semi answers that, Paco, so I'll give you credit there. NGAD, man, I think we also talked about NGAD the last time we were talking about the B-21, so it'd be good to get an update there, because I think there have been a few changes, at least from what I'm seeing, people jumping out, not doing it anymore, to what it might look like next, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, Northrop left. They came out and said, no, we're not going to bid on that. The Lockheed and Boeing are still in it. The engine providers are, you know, the usual suspects. So you have Pratt and GE. It looks like the prototypes are flying still. That's going on out there. And then the official RFP is out, which is the actual, like, who is going to win this project. What's the interesting part about NGAD is it's changed so many times, which is mostly transparent to people who don't track this stuff. But political pressure has actually, like, morphed the program a few times in the past, like, 5, 6, 7 years. So it started out. Well, it started out as, like, you know, your Raptor replacement. So what's your next generation air superiority thing? And then it turned into a Century series. We can rapidly iterate to restore the industrial base, advanced designs, and take all that money we talked about in that sustainment part of a program and dump it in the beginning. And we'll just dump money to basically rebuild the defense industry and advance the technology very, very quickly using money. and we're just not going to sustain it for 30 years like we do normally with an aircraft. It's like, okay, we'll go back to the Century Series model. We invest in a whole bunch of aircraft. We learn a lot. And then we kind of pick one that works and we kind of stick with it. Well, then that changed. Oh, and the government wanted to own everything. They wanted to be what's called a lead systems integrator. And then that changed. Like, hey, that's actually a lot of money to keep this many businesses building this many aircraft. Like, and then these aircraft, by the way, are like hundreds of millions of dollars each, right? So that bomber we talked about, it's like $750 million. Imagine if like two fighters were the cost of one bomber. Like, that's the kind of price point that they're, you know, looking at. So you're not going to be able to buy a lot of them, right? And then you'll fall back into the trap of like the Raptor. The Raptor's great, but there's only so many Raptors, right? 187, plus or minus one or two. And yeah, they can't be everywhere all at once. It's so... it could be the best thing in the world, but if you don't have enough, like, doesn't matter, right? So it's a weird situation. Now the latest iteration is they're going to pick one platform as the winner, and that's the one they're going to kind of press along with for a while. So it's kind of devolving back into like a status quo industry type program. But it did have the same ambitions, so I give them that for trying. Next year, so 2024, they're going to pick a winner. Whether or not they announce who it's going to be, I don't know. I will say that I think Boeing is doubling down that they think they're going to win that program. They just, they spent like $1 billion building a new, facility next to their St. Louis headquarters where the old McDonnell Douglas headquarters was.
Okay.
So they just broke ground to build a new LO, coating facility there. Most people don't realize this, but fun fact, most of Boeing's programs are built on Boeing owned facilities. Most of Lockheed's aircraft programs are built in government-owned facilities. So they don't own the buildings. They lease them, or they're government-provided. And so Lockheed sits in the building. They make the aircraft. Like the F-16, like Fort Worth, like the government owns that whole facility. It just has Lockheed's.
Really?
You know, yeah. That's a Plant 4. I believe that's U.S. Plant 4. But yeah, Lockheed's, you know, name's been on the building forever. We're... like Boeing, you know, they bought McDonnell Douglas, and so they inherited their facilities. That's why St. Louis has, you know, all of those aircraft lines connected to the airports from McDonnell Douglas, you know, back in the Cold War. So it's an interesting dynamic. I've walked all the lines. You see like the Boeing lines and you can see how they do things, and you see the Lockheed line in Fort Worth with the F-35 and how they do things. And, you know, they're just different economic models, just how they were, you know, incepted and over time and how it's, you know, developed. So when you get to like the T-7, you know, if they want to build an attack variant, like someone's going to have to build a building for it or something. There's no production line for those derivatives, you know, let alone like, you know, actual like operational capabilities and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of moving parts. That's interesting. I did not know that, because I just assumed like Plant 4 or the plant terminology for Lockheed, because a lot of the buildings are called that, was just like as a historic piece back from like World War II. And
well, they've been in there since like World War II. They used to build B-24s. Like they were pumping out like they were pumping out like 150 bombers a month out of that same line that the F-35 is on right now. It's crazy.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
It's wild. It's
crazy.
Not as much tech going in those things, but no. That's pretty impressive to crank out that many pieces of metal that can fly through the air.
Yeah, well, that was the same line that the Viper was originally on, and the Viper they were pumping out like one a day.
Yeah,
which is like that's pretty good.
I'm curious. I'm trying to get go to Greenville and check that out, because you know Bahrain. I don't know when Bahrain's getting their Block 70, but they unveiled it.
Yeah,
I don't know where it is in the.
What's the Block 70 just got delivered? One of them just maybe it got unveiled but not delivered. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, it was maybe 4 or 5 months ago they did like the big unveiling of it. I don't know where it is in the delivery timeline. The Bahrain air show is in 2024. Like you would think that's probably gonna be an opportune time to showcase the Block 70 as it's zipping around Bahrain.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Which Bahrain's
and then this week is the Dubai air show while we're recording. So yeah. I expect to see a very unique F-15 QA air show. I hear lots of things about it. So be curious to see how it actually pull it off.
You know, it's wild, because I did the Dubai show 2017. Really interesting, you know, from coming from like the air show world to go there, because it's a huge air show. They had every nation. China had their J-10s flying around. The Russian Knights were there. I think China's demo team is like the Augusta. So like they were there. But all this stuff's flying around. Like people are watching, but it's really not the main focus of it. It's selling and buying aircraft. And that one, that may, I told you, it's like I was there and like UAE was signing a multi-billion-dollar contract for new planes. Is it going to be Boeing or Airbus? And they're making the announcement. They do like a newsletter, a newspaper they put out every single day for the trade show.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like Tuesday, they made the announcement. Airbus thought they had this thing locked in place and it was going to be them, and Boeing won. And it was like WWE announcement style. Like I thought it'd be at a boardroom, like, hey, no, thanks, Paco. We're going with Boeing. But it was like, no, everyone building this auditorium, and it's like, and the winner is, and like holding up, you know, Boeing's hand. Everyone's like cheering. Airbus, oh, like their souls are crushed. You're like, wow. Like it was just ruthless.
You better have a video link on when you make this. That's because
it's like, oh my gosh. You just think like this is not like, it was not calm, collected, formal whatsoever. I mean, it was like rowdy and yeah, you suck because you lost, and just rubbing it in their face.
Man.
It was wild. And then meanwhile, like Lockheed, you know, like they had signed it was probably like a $1 billion contract with UAE for sniper pods. But like, oh yeah, we did that, you know, a few months ago and we just announced here. But it was just like, that was kind of like what I expected. It's like, we signed this deal. Look at us. And it was like a little bit, but the whole like Boeing, Airbus, what's UAE buying? What's Emirates getting? It's pretty, pretty epic.
There is a whole like business beat that does commercial aviation like that, that just tracks the industry for commercial. Yeah. Like Aviation Weekly is a great one. You know, they're like, lots of experience. Those guys are great. But yeah, it's a thing. It'd be kind of weird if it was like a defense, like if it was a military program, it would be kind of awkward, right? Like, read the room, man. Like, no, yes. Like we build these weapons so we don't have to use them, right? It's like deterrence theory. Not like our killing machine is better than yours.
Yeah, right. We got more SA-17s for sale. It was cool and interesting to see. So I'm sure you've been to it, but you know, the Chinese, the Russians, all their companies have booths set up. Like the Bahrain, the next year I had some Russians hand us like USB drives that were.
Oh, I heard that story yesterday. Yeah.
Designed as or thumb drives as a satellite. You're like, well, I'm definitely not putting this in my computer. I'll just turn this over. But
they're trying to use our trick against us, right? Like we invented that trick.
Yeah, not so fast, old Trojan horse. And fun fact for the Dubai show that's going on, I flew in there. This is probably 6 months ago, but there was 38 A380s sitting on the ramp, just not being used. That's a big old plane.
It's a big plane.
You know, the Emirates just haven't brought it out of mothball from old COVID, but yeah, 38 of them.
Have you ever flown on one of those?
I have. It's pretty wild.
I flew on a red eye from, it was either from DC to London or London to DC. I can't remember. I think it was, it must have been, I don't remember which one. It doesn't matter which way it was, but the plane was like 90% empty. So like my family, like each of us had a row.
That's
like a whole row. Like I put all the armrests up and like lay down, I guess, like, just because you can.
It's a wild. I think it's an ugly plane. Inside's nice, but it is rather impressive. You're like, how does this thing even fly?
There's something to be said. There's a saying about that. Like ugly planes, you know, don't usually make for good airplanes. Nice looking airplanes generally fly pretty well. I don't know why that is. It's science, I guess.
Yeah, these are facts.
These are facts.
Etch it in stone. We said CCAs. We got that going on too. What else we got going?
Oh man. So so we're doing the NGAD thing, and then there's the Navy has the NJAD. It's pronounced the same, but with a soft G. Like who does that? Like first of all, like,
I was going to ask you about
come up with your own acronym. If you're going to say it differently, just come up with a new name. All right.
They probably say SEAD, you know, instead of SEED.
Yeah, SEAD, like BOAT. I said, take your SEAD and give you a BOAT back to you. That's what it is. They're trolling us back of all the years we've been saying BOAT to them. They're like SEAD for SEED.
That is not how you pronounce that acronym. The amount of acronyms we have is staggering. And you're like, hey, we need to create an acronym that you can kind of pronounce it phonetically. What can we come up with? And you're like, just,
I have this running, I have this running joke in the merge now for like almost a year of like,
are you a passionate aviation enthusiast? Then you'll be thrilled to hear about our sponsor, Aircore Aviation. This exciting company has been revolutionizing the aviation industry since 2008, and they have some amazing career opportunities available. More about that in just a minute. Aircore Aviation is at the forefront of airworthiness of legacy aircraft dating all the way back to World War II. Their dedicated team is involved in various aspects of aerospace, including manufacturing, fabrication, restoration, and support, using state-of-the-art technology. Their exceptional expertise in core manufacturing capabilities like metal forming, CNC machining, and complete aircraft rebuilding has led to the restoration of some award-winning aircraft, such as a couple P-51s, such as P-51 Thunderbird, Twilight Tier, and Sierra Sioux 2. And if you've been following me for a while, you might remember I was fortunate enough to fly over the Super Bowl in 2018 in Minneapolis. The formation was led by Sierra Sioux 2 alongside two A-10s and myself in the F-16, so this is a very cool full-circle experience. These incredible achievements have captured the attention of aircraft owners, aviation enthusiasts, and the general public alike. If you've always dreamt of a career in aviation, then Aircore Aviation is the perfect place for you. They are rapidly expanding their team in 2024 and have job openings in departments such as engineering and CAD, quality assurance, fabrication, and restoration. This is your chance to turn a passion into profession. Aircore Aviation is offering some amazing benefits for full-time positions, including health insurance, PTO, HSA, retirement plans, life insurance, and the extra perk of enjoying Fridays off. If you're ready to be part of a team dedicated to fulfilling the dreams through the preservation of historical aircraft, visit aircoreaviation.com/careers today and take the first step towards an exciting career in aviation. Again, that's aircoreaviation.com/careers. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Army, I'm convinced, goes to school to figure out how to screw up acronyms. Like, they just invent random letters in the alphabet that, like, phonetically is impossible to sound. And they go, yep, that's it. That's the one. That's the one we're going to pick for this program. They're like, what? It's the what? Like, I can't even say it. It's fine. They're terrible. It's not an acronym if you can't make a word out of it. It's just a bunch of letters. Yeah, spicy tick. That was my spicy tick. Sorry.
Yeah.
They're terrible.
Easy now.
That's no one from the Army listens to this. Come on.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I think there are a couple Apache guys.
Yeah. No, they're great guys. I'm just giving them shit.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I mean, with exception, I mean, we tend to bash on Strike Eagle guys here on this podcast.
I mean, yeah, especially the guys that sit in the backseat. Man, your bro chats. Man. I know why I didn't get invited back. I listened to some of that and like, whoa, man.
Fox 3 close.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, man.
Stings. It stings my heart.
It hurts. Yeah. It's all good.
It's an exception, Paco. Yeah. No. I still, you know, I love the combat hammer I went to that we had, like, the massive vault for our, like, 20 pilots, and then going to the Strike Eagle vault. You're like, who did this building layout? It's like the 190 people are in this tiny little room. Like,
can I tell you, you ever been to Seymour Johnson?
I have not, actually.
Okay. Before any of you people make fun of the name of the base, it's actually named after a sailor. Okay. Not an airman. There's a fighter squadron on that base, the 333rd Fighter Squadron, the Lancers. That's the one of the two FTUs they have for training. And they had to build a new building. And Shaw had just done a remodel. This is like 15, 20 years ago now. And the contract, the engineering, combat engineering, whatever they are, the contractor people, civil engineering, there you go, on base, like, hey, well, you know, Shaw just did this remodel of this fighter squadron. We'll just do that. And so, can't make this up, without talking to the actual, like, unit, they put on contract and constructed a fighter squadron. Well, the problem with this brand new building is that it was designed for an F-16 fighter squadron. And so the building is literally half too small. Like no, the four ship briefing rooms, there's only like a handful in a fighter squadron generally. Like that's the two ship briefing room. It's like the two ship briefing rooms are like, those are closets.
Gosh.
So then they added on to the building to make it bigger. So it could actually accommodate it. Well, then they didn't contract that out right. So mine went to the B course and the building was being ripped apart the first time. So we were out in the little DDF to deploy debrief facilities for like most of my B course. And then they got it done. Dude. They couldn't get the building certified because none of the contractors at the base hired were cleared. So then they had to rip the vault and everything back apart again with another contractor and rebuild it again. And then it went through a third iteration. The last time it went through there, they added on to it again. It's like, man, like this is what not to do. Like this is terrible. And you know,
isn't that
how many people got promoted out of that?
Right.
Jesus.
I just released a podcast with Kevin Latchman. He was is a C-17 pilot in the Royal Air Force, was awarded the Air Force Cross for missing the bus full of nuns on the runway. Like literally, he was saying that in the Royal Air Force, I don't know how they do this, right? But if you're the boss, you create something that's a terrible program 10 years down the road. If that it comes back and it was at fault because of what you did, like you're held accountable. Now I don't know what happens. Maybe you get like a letter of admonishment or like, hey, it was Paco's fault. And I know he's gone in the private sector now, but you know, like us, we're like, yeah, come on in, destroy this program. And then you're going to be up and out and no one will blame you 2 years from now. It's going to be the guy who's sitting in the seat that eats it, so to speak, when everything goes sideways.
Yeah, the revolving door of responsibility is a really weird thing to see in play. Yeah.
Yeah, no, not my problem. I want to say our vault, they didn't have to completely redo our main briefing room because it flooded during one of the hurricanes.
Oh, man.
You know, it took, I don't know, 4 months to 5 months to start. And then like halfway through, I think they realized that several of the people working in there did not have security clearance or weren't cleared. So then they had to go rip out whatever they'd done, but they didn't get all the way finished. We're like, how's that not like, maybe it's not step one in the checklist, but it's probably step two or three in the checklist before
somewhere up there.
Yeah. Before unloading the truck, you must complete steps 1 through 5 and it lies somewhere in there.
Oh. Yeah. man, like water damage in a vault. That's like, for people who don't realize like that is like, that's like kryptonite because there's no windows, there's no ventilation. And once that you get that funk growing, it's like, oh god, I saw a vault get, it was like that forever. You'd have to air it out for an hour before you brought anyone in, because if you lock it up overnight and you come back in, you're like, oh my god, I'm like, we're gonna die of mold poisoning if that's even possible.
Everyone's just sick.
Yeah, everyone's sick. And we've got the smoker's cough. No one smokes. I don't know what's going on,
dude. Yeah, not good. I was gonna ask 15EX because you flew the EX, you got a couple flights in the EX before you retired, right?
Yeah, I flew the EX more than the E my last few years. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. What, I was talking to a guy the other day who was a Strike Eagle guy and he was asking about, I was like, you know, I don't know, but I know a guy who does, but what is the current game plan with the EX? Cause it seems like it's, hey, guard units are getting it. Psych, you're getting F-35. Is there going to be a Wizzo in the backseat or is it not going to be, what's going on with, what is the plan with the EX?
Well, it depends on today's Monday. So, I mean,
yeah,
it'll change by Wednesday. So
it's going to land on aircraft carriers.
Yeah. It's like it sounds flippant, but those are the details that kind of don't matter right now. The details that do matter is how many are you going to buy? Like they don't even know that. Yeah,
I was surprised how fast that popped up on the, I mean, I know it didn't, it popped up on the public radar scope. I was leaving Shaw and actually comics like, oh yeah, we're buying EXs next year. Like what? No one had ever like talked about this in any of the spheres I ran in, but it just popped up and then, oh yeah, we're buying them. And then they start showing up fairly quickly.
Yeah. There's a backstory behind that.
I would love to hear the backstory.
All right. Well, so I was in the Pentagon at the time. I was actually pretty involved in certain aspects of this. It's my fault.
Okay.
No. Yeah. I'm a nobody. I'm just a, you know, FGO walking around the Pentagon. This was in my portfolio. So I was helping shape this program. So what happened was there's a, there's these fighter force studies that happen, and they generally don't get released because they're classified. And there had been so many fighter studies done over the years that it's like, whatever you don't like the answer, what do? Commission another study.
So, yeah, you eventually get the answer.
You eventually get the answer you want. Just keep asking, right? Different people. So they had like multiple studies that had like, here in the next, you know, 20 years, this is the optimal force mix. Turns out it's not 100% fifth gen because just a whole bunch of reasons that you don't care about for this right now. And so the OSD, which is like the people who run the Pentagon, like on top of the services for the Secretary of Defense, they're the checks and balances of what the services are doing. So the OSD comes back and they're like, well, what's your plan to like buy fourth generation aircraft? And they're like, what are you talking about? We don't have a plan. We're, you know, fifth gen or bust. I'm like, well, every study that's been commissioned over the past 7 years says otherwise. And so it actually went to, I think it went to the DepSecDef. Anyways, big picture is that there was a wedge in the budget to buy fourth generation aircraft for the Navy. Those are the Super Hornets. And OSD basically said, we're going to take this money and give it to the Air Force to buy F-15 EXs. And Boeing had been working on some stuff anyways. From Boeing, it is, you know, revenue neutral because it's, you're going to buy F-15s versus F-18s. Obviously set off a huge political firestorm with Lockheed Martin, a lot of lobbying on the Hill back and forth, and yada, yada, yada. We ended up with some aircraft. So as we're recording this, we have two. Number three and number four will be arriving in the Air Force in a couple weeks. But it had a lot of missteps. It started out with a bang, and then it kind of fizzled off. COVID didn't help, and yeah.
Are they going to go active duty, or is now they're just going to kick them to the guard or reserves?
Oh man, that again is a really interesting question. It changes depending on your strategy, right? So if you're the guard, I'll just play both sides of the equation. If you're the guard and you're looking at this and you go, you know what, the worst thing in the world to ever happen for the guard is to have an orphan fleet. And an orphan fleet is a aircraft that exists in the guard, but not the regular Air Force. So you want to be wedded to something. Yeah. You got to get the Air Force pregnant with the same fleet. And so you can actually like reap the benefits of that. Right. And so if you sent the initial aircraft to the guard and then cut to program, as they're doing, if I'm the guard, I'd be like, oh, no, I don't want these. Like, I want to get the Air Force pregnant with them enough where maybe it's 50-50 mix or something where the sustainment and the upgrades and everything will be funded and not just kind of a throwaway like some of the orphan fleets that we've had in the past with the guard. That is a huge, huge component of the negotiations of if you just knew, like with predictability, how many aircraft you're going to buy, you could actually have these coherent discussions. But right now there's so much risk because there's so much uncertainty. I wouldn't want to make a decision on either side of it. I mean, obviously the C models are falling out of the sky. I mean, they're getting older every day. They should have been retired 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So they're limping along until we get a replacement, but you know, then you get an F-35 replacing the C model and all that. It's a hot chocolate mess. That was just a mix of, politics, bad decisions, and just, you know, lack of foresight. So
shocking. Yeah. Shocking. I think Klamath and Barnes, they're slated to get the 35. They got listed for that. I guess the orphan piece, I didn't think about it, but like the C-27, that little guy, it lasted for like 2 years. Guard units, I think Mississippi had switched over. I flew on one from like Kandahar to Bagram, and then, you know, the next year it was.
But even hey, like we your, just got your, this. Like your early, like your pre-block variants, like in the Guard, like those are like, those are basically orphan aircraft, right? The people don't want to put money into them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the C model. The C model stopped getting upgrades when they divested all the active ones. Like most of the C model fleet was in the Guard, right?
Yeah. It's actually impressive. I guess we need it. So it got love and kind of kept it around. But I mean, those guys, like you said, like they've been doing the majority of the C model work for quite a while.
Yeah, they have. Mm. And the whole reason that the F-15 got an ESA radar to begin with, because an ESA radar was a fifth generation, like sensor, like no one was going to put it in a fourth generation aircraft. But when they kept cutting the Raptor fleet, they're like, well, we gotta put something in these F-15s if we're gonna try to augment them. And so I remember flying the very first aircraft that were in test, in operational test at Nellis, and we were in a like a force on force stuff, and we had, you know, Raptors on one side, and we had two F-15Cs with these brand new ESA radars, and then we had F-15Es, and we're like, oh my god, this is great! Like, this is the best thing ever. This is, you know, this is a long time ago. Like, oh, it turns out, like, you can see a lot of things with an ESA radar.
So. Especially an F-15.
Yeah.
The big old honking radar. Out there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they save all the money using chalk, so they can afford to put the radars in them. So,
oh, yeah.
That's my one chalk comment.
You got it in one chalk per podcast.
Again, if you're just now tuning in, C-Model guys, they don't use whiteboards like were invented 40 years ago. They still use chalk to draw stuff up. Oh, I hate chalk. It's the worst.
Oh, it's terrible. I had to chalk up a whiteboard up in debrief.
Chalking it up sounds better, but
yeah, it's easier to say, right? But it's like terrible to execute. When I was in weapons school, there's a point where you have to like manually debrief, draw everything on the board until you get to like, you know, okay, you're good enough. So I had to debrief a 2v6 ACM fight with like dry erase. Here's a pen length, and like here's this person's over here, I think, and that was terrible. Terrible.
How many times did you do that ride? Yeah. that sounds heinous.
Yeah, I learned a lot though. It's great.
Look at you now, because you taught at the weapons school as well, right?
I didn't teach there. No, I'm
okay.
I got my get her done certificate, and I was not invited back. So, you know those guys in the Top Gun movie, all those extras in the movie with Tom Cruise, you know, like they're just like they're there in the background and they're at, you know, Top Gun, and they, you know, do your thing and they leave. Like, yeah, that was me.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, that's where we're going to be. Yeah. It worked out for you. Look at you now.
Yeah, it's going all right.
Now, what else is happening before we wrap up here? I know you got a busy week. You're traveling. We've tried to link up a couple times. It's just been tough. So,
well, I'll give you pick the topic. You want to talk? You want to talk CCAs? We can talk fifth gen upgrades. Whatever you want. Mm. We've just been talking about whatever. So,
I know we have been ping ponging around. Fifth gen is always, it's always an interesting thing to talk about given everything that's going on in the world today, I think.
Okay.
I don't know. Up to you. We could do both.
I got time.
Yeah. You got the talking stick. Ask questions.
Okay. Well, let's talk CCAs first, because it'll make more sense, I think.
Okay.
So CCAs, that's collaborative combat aircraft, yet another acronym.
Yeah, it's good. We need one.
They're a subset of another acronym called ACPs, Autonomous Collaborative Platforms, just to keep it even more confusing. CCAs are like the fighter type version of an ACP, but the Air Force has a strategy. There'll be other autonomous vehicles doing things, whether it's like logistics, transport, like resupply, CSAR, you know, take the people out of the vehicle, the rescue vehicle. CCAs is the hot topic, though. That's the one that's got about $6 billion over the next 5 years in the budget. You can go Google the document and read it. The talking point is the Air Force wants to buy 2,000 of them. I think that's more of a planning function. It's probably going to be a little bit less than that. But that's the talking point, 2,000. The reason why these are important goes back to, you know, we talked about bombers, right? So bombers give you operational reach. They don't have enough bombers. But even without the operational reach, you would argue that the Air Force is getting old and it's too small, right? So it's the smallest it's ever been, the oldest it's ever been, all that stuff. And so to jump to a different curve, how do you fix it? Like, you can't just dump more money in the industry. Like, that's kind of how we got in the problem we're at. So jumping to a new cost curve, how can we field affordable, capable mass on a timeline that matters without like spending $1 trillion? That's really where the magic trick is, right? So we can make these things unmanned, and then we can use autonomy to kind of fill in the gaps of where those manned elements would be. And I would argue that just taking the person out of some of these platforms for certain missions unlock so much value. Like, you think about, like, whenever you put someone in harm's way. So if you're going to commit an aircraft, that aircraft has a person, you're committing the harm's way. Now you have your CSAR package considerations, your risk to force, risk to mission, your ALR. There's all these things that are instantly coupled, and they're very linear. And so if you can take the person out, that's how you get your CCA, and now you actually can decouple that. And so my risk to mission and risk to force becomes, like, you know, tailorable, right? If I, these things are cheaper, it's like sending an MQ-9 to get shot down. You go, ah, you know, they shot down a Predator, right? The song, right? It's the same thing. But now you're doing it for more high-end missions, right? So that's really what's going on. The big debate right now is how much they're going to cost, right? So we said that they had to be affordable, but they also had to be capable, and then we had to buy a shitload of them. So mass, affordable, capable, mass. The House draft version of the NDAA, they're trying to impose cost restrictions to hit these affordability targets. They're $3 million for an expendable, $10 million for an attritable, and then $25 million for exquisite. So the expendable, think of it as like a cruise missile with, you know, a swarming cruise missile, something like that. Your attritable, think of like target drone type things, like, hey, you're going to send them waves of these and they get shot down. They're missile sponges. We don't care. And then your $25 million are like your unmanned F-35 type stuff, right? Like those kinds of missions, whether it's SEED, air superiority. The Air Force is like, I don't know who said that. We're not doing that. So they think it's going to be like, you know, double. So somewhere in the $40, $50 million, about the half the price of an F-35. So call it $40 million. Checks in the mail. We'll see what happens, how that comes through with Congress and the Pentagon. That's probably the biggest thing, because that's going to determine what you can and can't do, right? And so if you're going to spend $40 million in aircraft, this aircraft is probably going to be bigger than you think it is. And then you get to like range, speed, payload, maneuverability, like those design attributes, you're going to be really fascinating to see play out. You know, you want to build something that maybe cannot aero refuel, but flies for like 6 hours. Like, okay. Like, there's a design trade-off there. If it's going to fly for 6 hours though, like, it's probably not going to be very maneuverable. It's just how aerodynamics work, right? Everything's a compromise. Yep. So it'd be curious to see how they not just build like a solution, but the kind of family of solutions in this space. There'll be different types, I think, for different things. But yeah, the autonomy is probably the more interesting part of it right now. You know, an aircraft design is an aircraft design. What you want the autonomy to do, and the different advances that you can, you know, the autonomy, what you can and can't do with it. If you trust it, it's a whole field of science for that. We can have a whole podcast just on that if you want.
We have a series.
Yeah, the whole series, turns out. Yeah, I do that in my day job. So,
yeah. There's a lot to peel back on this. So quick pivot or along the same line. So, all right, we're up against a continuing resolution here, like in 2 days, I think, as we record this.
Yeah.
How does like a continuing resolution, government shutdown, operating off of these CRs versus a budget, et cetera, does it impact things like this? Because I always hear, you know, the SecDef say, you know, there's certain items, right, that we basically just keep operating at whatever the last level was as we operate on these continuing resolutions. So we're not able to either fund or sustain the things above the line. I don't know how you phrase it, but
yeah, right. So a continuing resolution is they have a resolution to continue the burn rate of money of the previously approved spending limit, right? So whatever it was in FY23, October 1st, FY24 hit. There's no, either the government shuts down because there's no appropriation and no authorization to continue, or there's this resolution from Congress that says, hey, you can keep the lights on, keep coming to work until we figure out what your budget's going to be. And that is expiring, is what you're talking about. Well, during that time, you know, that's the last time we passed a budget on time. It's been like 10 years, and it's been like four times in the history of the budget cycle we've actually passed all the appropriations on time, like four times in the past 70 years. So like, so expecting it to happen every October 1st is like insanity. Like, it's not going to happen, right? Let's just get that out of the way. Like, oh, fascinating. Like, batting average is zero. Like, okay. Like, taking on the swing. Let's see what happens.
It's going to happen this year.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Yeah. So we're at it right now is there's some budget negotiations and things going on the Hill. But for things like CCAs or these new programs, one of the things that's weird about a CR is you are prohibited from starting new programs. You have to actually have it. There's a waiver process, and it's like maybe the whole Pentagon gets like, you know, five exceptions to policy for the whole like year. But during a CR, like you can't start anything. That's one of the legal things about it. Even if you could start something, here's where it gets even weirder. If you could start something, say like the CCA program, you wanted to like field this, you know, here's a $100 million contract under a CR. Even if you could write the contract, it's actually illegal because you don't have a money appropriated in that funding account to pay for the contract that you're obligating the government for. So it's a really weird situation. CRs suck. This is why, like, if you're a finance officer or a contracting officer, the first quarter of every fiscal year is when you go on vacation because nothing happens.
It's one day.
One day.
4 out of 70 times. Vincent, you better be ready to work.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, well, I know. Well, I guess I haven't seen too many news articles this week, maybe because I'm just not getting fed those articles and I haven't gone out looking for it. But yeah, I think the 17th, right? It's supposed to shut down again unless something happens. There's a lot of politics happening. There's always a lot of politics happening. But I'm trying to think. What? So General Brown was confirmed as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Yep.
We got a Marine Corps commandant.
Yep.
But then,
well, then he had a heart attack.
Yeah, that's what, right. I haven't heard his condition.
Stable.
He's still out, right?
Stable.
That's okay. Good. Those two, maybe like one or two other ones that were confirmed, because there's a whole list of general officers or flag officers waiting to be promoted, or 06 is waiting to be promoted to flag officer, and then a lot of appointees in and around the government and DOD specifically.
Yeah, for those nominations, once you get to the 3 and 4 star level, those are nominations, not necessarily promotions. It's kind of a weird nuance. So if you notice, like the last time you saw like a three star move to a 4 star position, they get promoted and assume command in the same ceremony because their promotion is for appointment for that duty, which is rated at that position. So like the COMAC, you know, the 4 star. Mm-hmm. He'll come up. Well, the next one's already a 4 star, but you know, when the current 4 star, he did his 4 star promotion and assumption of command in the same ceremony, because it's tied to his appointment from Congress.
I did not know that. Makes sense. I mean, I guess it makes sense. But
yeah,
there's a lot of those guys getting held up right now. So
not a good situation. Not a good situation. And now you have like the ultimate situation of like lame duck. Right. Because no one wants to do anything or take any initiatives because they're not going to be around to follow through, and they're going to be perceived as stepping on toes of, you know, people who are going to be coming in right after them to do something. And so they're like, what do I do? So there's a lot of like silence right now going on at AFA. Actually, in September, the big conference, the airspace and cyber, you didn't see a lot of big announcements from people in uniform because of that. Like, they're not going to do a lot of, like, let the political appointees make some talking points, you know, like secretary can talk all he wants, you know, but the uniform people are kind of like shying away because they're all like in limbo waiting to move. And you don't want to, like, why am I going to announce an initiative at this conference and then move in 2 months? Like, that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That's been going on for several months now. So,
you know,
see what happens.
Politics.
All right. Well, yeah. Politics. Not my thing. Before we wrap up, fifth gen. What's going on with fifth gen? You said you.
No, yeah. So, well, the Raptor's getting some upgrades, which is great. You probably saw the picture that got posted last year from COMAC. He's got the firing a JATM with these low drag pylons, also known as LO fuel tanks, and then carrying the IRST pods. There's been some posts on that. That's finally now, you know, public. That's been at work for many years. So that's going on. The other cool thing about the Raptor is the Racer, which is what they're called. It's the Raptor Agile Capability Release, the Racer upgrades. I think they're on Racer 3 right now. But that actually brought two things. The first one, near and dear to your heart probably, is like, they're finally on the link.
Hey, welcome.
Welcome. Welcome to the 80s.
Right. I remember a red flag, like, hey, it's happening. It's going to happen really soon. Did not happen really soon, but it's really nice to be like, hey, could you tell me what's going on? Because I have no idea what's going on out here. Can't see anything on my radar.
Yeah, for everyone who's not tracking like the just how comically stupid it was, you'd have F-22s and these like red flags and stuff, and they can receive all of this information, but they can't actually transmit any information. And so the only way to transmit information out of like everything the Raptor is seeing into like, you know, an F-16 or an F-15 is like key the UHF radio and just like explain what's going on. So it's verbal. There's no data link. There's no way to pass the information off of the Raptor. So it's been like a running joke. And they see everything. Raptor sees everything. Let's say just can't really do anything with all of that info.
Yeah, they just don't share.
Just don't share. Yeah, hey, yeah, it's so selfish.
Do the NDA, did it get approved? Because they were talking about all the Raptors that were down at Tyndall originally. They hadn't been upgraded in a decade or so. That were going to cost millions upon millions of dollars to upgrade them. Air Force wanted to retire those, you know, make way, spend some money in other places. Did that get approved and make its way through?
So fun fact, that issue, there's like a, how many are there? There's of the 185 Raptors, there's like, I don't know, 30. There's something like 30 Raptors, which are these old configuration. And they decided, hey, we're going to make these our training jets. And the Air Force, like the Air Force and Congress agreed, I'm not making this up, like 15 years ago that they were going to do this. We're going to have split configurations of the fleet. We're not going to upgrade these jets. We don't want to spend the money. Well, yada, yada, yada. If you basically snap a chalk line in time of one aircraft fleet and then the other aircraft you continue to upgrade for the next 15 years, you're going to have a disparity between training and operations. Like, surprise, right?
Shocking.
So for probably the past 7 years, there's been a big back and forth between Congress and the Air Force, where Congress is trying to get the Air Force to upgrade these Raptors because they're not, quote, combat capable. I'd say they are combat capable, just not the same kind of combat capability that the ops jets have. You can still go out and sling missiles and do some stuff with them, like they're Raptors, right? They're just, you know, the Raptors stuck in time, that's all. But here's the kicker, is that Congress wants to make the Air Force upgrade these aircraft, but Congress refuses to give the Air Force any money to upgrade the aircraft. And these aircraft are like, I want to say it's a 9-year upgrade. You're like, oh my God, like by the time it's like 9 years and like $20 or $30 million a jet to upgrade them to get them to the combat coded configs of the fleet. And you go, well, by the time they come off the line, you're going to be retiring the fleet. Like, this doesn't make any sense. Right. So there's a big back and forth, like, you know, money talks when there's no money. Like, okay, like, thank you for your interest in national security.
Coffee shot. Well, yeah, you had to think about that too. I mean, because I've never flown a Raptor, but I imagine the Raptor is inherently an easy plane to fly. But managing the systems, the formation, the tactics, like, that's where pilots are earning their money. And so if you don't upgrade the avionics and the, you know, whatever capabilities to match what your operational is going to be, like, at some point you're like, sweet, you can take off and land and you have a basic understanding of what's happened, but then you show up in the ops squadron and like, okay, now we actually have to teach you how to use this jet, you know, which is not just going to be one flight.
Then you get into like the political strategy. So the Air Force was like, well, this was last year, like, we want to retire these jets. And Congress is like, why? Like, well, they're too expensive to upgrade and they're like split configuration, like not realizing like that was the agreed upon strategy. Right. So like, this is the result of bad decisions that, you know, in a bottle of Jack and a bar napkin, you know, and a couple of dudes at the bar, you can figure this out. Like, this is not a good idea.
Well, if you were in the Royal Air Force, this is where we'd be going back and be like, 15 years ago, we'd be like, it was you who made this decision. And you wouldn't care because you're, you know, sitting at your beach house or whatever, but just know we found you.
We found you. You're the guy. You screwed this up for everyone else. Oh, man.
It's like, how do you even track that? But I was like, the Brits, they're really good at red tape and bureaucracy.
I don't know. We're pretty good at it too, you know. Pretty good at it.
Yeah,
too.
No, I mean that's any kind of government agency.
Well, I mean, that's not, then you have the F-35. So F-35 number 1000 is at Fort Worth right now on the line. I saw it a few months ago. I can't remember what country it was. I think it was a US version. There's like a because the way that they, because there's three plants that actually push them out. Most of them are coming through Fort Worth. They like, it's this one plus or minus like two tails on either side. Like, we're not exactly sure. So there was a variance there. I'm it's supposed to be coming out any day now. Hopefully by the end of the year, you'll see number 1,000 hit the line. The problem is that there's a backlog of actually like, where do those aircraft going? So
that's what I heard.
Yeah. So block four is the upgrade to make the F-35 like ready for the 2025 fight and beyond. It's a $16.5 billion upgrade. Side note, if you had a $16.5 billion upgrade in any fighter in the United States, it would be freaking awesome, right? Hey, we have the Viper fleet is now has a $16.5 billion upgrade. You're like, yes, it's going to be awesome. Like, what is it going to do? Like, I don't know, but it's going to be awesome.
Laser beams for sure.
Yeah. So it's not, yeah, you put enough money in anything, it's going to be awesome, right? So the block four, this upgrade relies on these jet modifications, tech refresh called TR3. Well, TR3 is behind schedule for some supplier and subcontractor issues. So that's one of the problems. The other problem is, imagine if I told you that the $16.5 billion upgrade doesn't work unless you have new engines and a new cooling system.
Yeah.
You know, wasn't part of the program. It's actually, so not including that cost does not include the engine upgrades or the cooling system upgrades. Oh man, it's going to be, I'm glad I'm not managing that program. Oh.
Well, I was talking to Billy Flynn, cause he was talking about that it requires a new, more power.
Yeah.
To handle everything. And but
you know, what's crazy. You know what grinds my gears? Is you want to talk about accountability? What grounds my gears?
What keeps Pac up at night?
Oh man, yeah. Like on this, like Lockheed Martin, like to their credit, Lockheed Martin identified this issue like 15 years ago. And they're like, hey, government, just so you know, the cooling system and there's a whole like kilowatt outage of power, electrical and cooling. And like, this is only going to get you this far. Like, this isn't going to work. And they're like, yeah, we are right. And now here we are like, hey, Lockheed, this isn't going to work. And like, yeah, we told you like, you know, 15 years ago.
Because isn't one of the course of action, like the engine replacement piece is like $6 billion.
It depends. So they've decided, so this is where it got weird about 6 months ago of like, what engine is going to replace the current engine in the F-35? So the two options are, what's called an ECU, the engine core upgrade. So make the replace the core in the current fleet of engines. The plus is that it's usable by all the variants, the A, B, and C. Every customer will inherit that upgrade. It's going to be great. The downside is it may not solve all of the problems, right? It'll solve some of the problems, but maybe not all of the problems. So to solve all of the problems, you really need a new engine. And that's where the adaptive engine comes into play. There's not been an adaptive engine fielded operationally in the world. And so now you're like, oh man, we're going to take this $16.5 billion upgrade and then throw a new engine that's never been actually like fielded in a fighter. This is going to be like more concurrent development and cost and like, ugh. Then you get into the cooling system. So like, there's like the pipes that run through the jet to cool all these avionics. The pipes aren't big enough. I think Billy might've talked about this in the pod. Like, you start like cutting the airframe to make the pipes bigger. Like, there's definitely some engineering, considerations of weakening the bulkheads to make the pipes bigger to pump more cooling into the jet. So it's not a very big jet, it turns out. It's pretty crammed tight.
It's got a lot of gas though, but
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When you're talking about cutting it open, do it because even fitting more missiles in there. That's what Billy talked about that too. I think that's a physical modification that is happening as the jets are built on the assembly line. You're not going to
redo
that.
That's right. That's called the sidekick. That's the put the extra missile. It fits on the A and C, but not the B of the three variants. The other part of block four is what's called the aft bulkhead mod. They actually move the aft bulkhead of the weapons bay further back so they can actually fit in. As it turns out, the F-35 is a seed platform with no seed weapon. So that weapon will field eventually, like in the next, 5, 7, 10 years, maybe. But that's been like this kind of a running joke. It's like, ah, oh, this is a, it's a seed platform with no actual stand-in attack weapon. So
it's fine.
It's all fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. China, if you're listening, everything's fine. Everything's fine.
It's fine. Yeah, they got their problems too.
Yeah, I know. I know.
You said this. We were joking about the other day. Some pretty great rejoin videos. I think it was the J-11 that intercepting the B-52 at night. That guy was overshooting like a big dog. I was like, you can probably see his eyeballs are as big as saucers. As
yeah, he put out that speed brake. I was like, whoop, yep, he's gonna overshoot.
Yep,
and
too much closure there.
And you've done enough rejoins to know this. Like, if you have a sight picture when you're like, oh, I'm gonna rejoin to that aircraft, you know in your mind, like, okay, I know what the visual references are and the approach angles, and I can judge distance because you don't have depth perception at night with NVGs, so you're just looking at sizes, right? Size and range.
Yeah.
Well, if you, and they did it against a B-52. So if you've ever seen certain angles of a B-52 versus like a KC-135, for instance, way misleading, because the B-52 has a very thin fuselage, so you think it's further away, but it has these really long wings. Like, oh my god, like you could actually like hit the wing, yeah, without thinking too hard about it if you try to think of it as a normal type of aircraft. So it's definitely some there's definitely a pucker factor there. They got it on tape too, which is great.
Yeah, so it was great
for all of our for all of us to enjoy and throw, you know, shade back over the pond to them. So, you know, pure sarcasm and ridicule, it works.
Yeah, I don't know, if you're gonna get filmed and broadcast across the globe, make sure your rejoin's on point. You know,
it was like the guy. It's just, like, hey, just say, I got an idea. Hear me out. We're gonna dump fuel in front of the MQ-9 and like, what?
This is gonna be great.
It's gonna be great.
Oh wait, that's what I Flash and I were joking. I was like, I mean, if you think about it, right? That I always say the average age inside a formation is probably like 30. I mean, somewhere in that range, you know. And it's like at the tactical level, you can have a strategic level impact very quickly and kick off World War III, you know, just by shenanigans.
Yeah. Hey, watch this. Like, no. I don't know what it is, but don't do it. Those are dangerous words.
That's how it starts. It's not going to end well.
No,
it's not going to end
not
well
at all. Well, Rain, we talked about a little bit of everything. This is almost like our little just like catch up chat. We just invited, you know, your audience to just kind of, you know, follow us along.
Listen. Yeah. Great. There's a lot of things happening in the world. It's been good. It's been too long. We're going to do it more frequently.
Yeah.
You're busy.
Well, you're busy too. We've been talking for like 2 months to figure out our schedules just to do this. So we made the stars align. We completely underwhelmed the audience. So we're aiming for average and we shacked it.
Yeah, that's right. Set the bar low. It's easier to trip across.
That's right. And
finish the day off. Paco, man, I appreciate it. It was good catching up, brother.
All right. Hey, before I leave, if you listeners are out there and you're still hanging on, thank you. Please check out my newsletter. I'd really appreciate it. Oh, I've heard good things about it. Now I'm biased, but I hear good things.
I do like your newsletter is great. And here's what I'm going to do, because I'm actually get off this. I'm going to record an intro to this, which will go in front, and I'll put up. So we'll catch them in the beginning.
That's
really where you get them. People got to check out the Merge newsletter, because the stuff you put in there and the things you find, I meant to ask, how long does it take you to put together a newsletter? I think I asked the first time we did it.
Don't ask.
You probably work.
Don't ask.
Just hours a week. You have no other life. Just record a podcast, travel, work.
Yeah.
Put together a newsletter. That's why people should check it out.
Dude, it's a lot of work. Like we talked earlier, like so much work goes into the stuff that people don't realize. You consume it, you get it for free. All you have to do is just, you know, like, follow, subscribe, that kind of thing. And that's all we're asking.
All those things.
Yeah.
It's all self-inflicted pain. I ask myself why I do this sometimes, but you know, it's fun. It's fun to have these combos. And
yeah. Look for a little break over the holiday. It'd be nice.
Yeah. I think I'm idle. There're going to be some re-releases that drop in December. So as people are listening, if they're still hanging on, like they're going to hear some re-releases, which is good to bring it out of the vault. I mean, I've had episodes that have been sitting there for 3 years that, if you just join middle of the road here, you probably didn't go back to episode 13.
Isn't it a weird thing? You're like, oh, this is a great podcast. Like and you have like 70 something episodes now. Like how many people scroll all the way back in the catalog and go, oh, episode like 15, let me check that one out. Like no one does that.
Right. No one does.
No one.
Which I did. I re-released one. I had the you remember it's like the Mammoth Lake fires out in California. This was 3 years ago. This, and it's like incredible footage or and pictures of these guys. One's a Chinook and a Blackhawk, and they go in. The Chinook packs out like 120 some odd people and ferrying them out just back and forth, saving all these people. So all the crew, they got DFCs for it. I was like, man, this thing, it was like one of my first episodes I did. I was like, you know, small following at that point. I was like, oh, I'm going to re-release this, which was, it was a good thing. I got a lot of good feedback because again, no one, there's like four people that are going to scroll all the way to the beginning and just kind of go through and say, oh, maybe I'll listen to that one. But
the data doesn't lie. For the one or two people are like, I scroll back, like the 99 others yeah. don't. So
yeah, these are facts.
These are facts.
These are facts.
Etched in stone.
All right. Well, check out the Merge newsletter because people can subscribe. I'll link that down below, and then the podcast. So there we go. But they're going to have heard this in the opening. So
all right.
We're leaving now.
All right. Thanks, Rand. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Paco.
The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns Gear and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgarin.com/rain.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.